You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, everyone. This is Mark Schaefer. Join me, Mitch Joel, Tom Webster, and so many others at this fall's Social Brand Forum in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Every person who attends will get a free copy of my new book, The Content Code. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Scott Stratton. Scott is the president of Unmarketing. He is an expert in viral, social, and authentic marketing, which he calls unmarketing. Formerly a music industry marketer, national sales training manager, and a professor at the Sheridan College of Business, he ran his UN agency for nearly a decade before solely focusing on speaking for events for companies like PepsiCo, Adobe, Red Cross, Hard Rock Cafe, Cirque du Soleil, Saks Fifth Avenue, Deloitte, and Fidelity Investments when they need help guiding their way through the viral social media and relationship marketing landscape. He now has over 175,000 people following his daily rantings on Twitter and was named one of the top five social media influencers in the world on Forbes.com. He has written four best-selling business books, the newest being Unselling, The New Customer Experience, which was just named Sales Book of the Year by 1-800-CEO-READ. Scott, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. I like to call it Unbrand, but that's okay. We'll deal with that later.
I was going to say, I think we can. It's like the official renaming of a day for a celebrity. This is the episode where we have the honorary changing of the name to Unbrand.
But, Unbrand. I love it.
But I love when I was grabbing this bio from your speaking resource page, and it's like the short version, and then it adds a few more paragraphs for the longer version. And then I think there's something akin to, seriously, more? And you have more. So is there anything that the short bio leaves off that folks listening should know?
No, it's the thing is, I think the shortest bio is the best, which is Scott's going to yell a lot. Here he is, you know, and that's, it's only been read once by a client. It's funny where, you know, I do, I think about 50 keynotes a year, and I have to stand, you know, near the side of the stage or close from it when they read that out. And I got into the point where I was rolling my eyes. I'm like, come on, let's get through this. It's too, and when the vain keynote speaker, you know, gets too overwhelmed by how long the bio is, we got to make some changes. So, you know, there's that common ground. They usually pick the middle one. It's like this oatmeal's too hot, it's too cold, it's just right, and that's that bio in the middle.
Well, yeah, you're it's interesting because your bio is a kind of unique brand touch point, and I think especially if you're speaking, if you're introduced, you really start to think about that and think, oh gosh, because I think sometimes there's that, you know, kind of website bio that is meant to be read by an online user, but then something that is, you know, read by someone standing up on stage is kind of a horse of a different color. It's like, don't get into all of the random things that I do on there. So,
well, you look at it though. You're talking about brand. If coincidentally enough, that when I do a keynote, I'm usually going in front of an audience that doesn't know who I am. And so that actually, even though I roll my eyes, that bio sets the entire tone for whether or not they think they're going to listen and if I have any credibility. So although I've heard enough of it, hearing it hundreds and hundreds of times over the past few years, it's the fact that that audience usually needs it. And one of the worst things that can happen is somebody introduces me who has already seen me or knows me. He's like, here's Scott. He needs no introduction. And I get up. I'm like, I do, actually. I do need an introduction. Because right now, you have General Zod coming on stage to talk to you. And they're like, who is this guy? And is that the sound guy? So we need that.
who is this guy and is that this guy? And the General Zod thing, you know, could be, you know, I saw a picture of you with your hair pulled back too.
Yeah.
Like Zod Prime, the Terrence Stamp Zod.
Dude, like this is old. So we're going Superman 1.
Yeah.
Like, this is, yeah, the original for sure. That's where the baby boomers in the crowd start laughing. You know, I'm on their side. And the young people are like, he doesn't look like General Zod from that new Superman. So it's fun.
And I have to think, having seen you speak a few times, I have to think that there might have been a time or two, at least when you might have either mentioned Neil or offered to make someone governor of the planet Houston.
Exactly. You have to do what you got to do. And when the audience is thinking it, you know, you got to say it. And I certainly have been called, you know, many of things up on stage from either my anger or my look or just that they don't like me. And I like some of them. The Dave Grohl of marketing is nice. The Henry Rollins of marketing is nice, although he's perfectly fine himself at doing marketing talks. And then it was the little person from Elf. But luckily he's moved on to the Game of Thrones, Peter Dinklage. And now I'm more than happy to be compared to him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I could see that too, even though you're much taller. So, there's that.
The only one I don't want is what I always get, which is you're that guy who played Robert the Bruce in Braveheart. I'm like the dude that betrayed the patron saint of my home heritage country that's me. Awesome.
Yeah, that's an even deeper cut than the original Zod. But now that mention that, I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. That you just need some sort of furry cloak that you can.
And my father needs to have leprosy. That's pretty much how it works. Yeah.
Well, the Henry Rollins thing's interesting because I was just listening to the most recent episode when we're recording this of the Unpodcast, where mm-hmm. you talked about. About meeting Henry Rollins, preceding him at I think the copy blogger, the
Authority Rainmaker event. Yeah. Yeah, in Denver. Yeah, it was I don't get starstruck very often. And for me, I have the privilege of meeting a lot of people and my idols, and some of my idols have become peers. And it's really nice to be able to do these things. And he was the keynote after I did a talk at this event. And I agreed. Brian Clark's a buddy of mine. And I told him last year, I said, I will do the event if you sign Rollins for this event. I almost got a t-shirt made saying, I'm just here for Rollins. And then we listened to him and it was just mind blowing. It was great. I think sometimes the best advice we can get as people in business or marketers or branders, or even especially entrepreneur side of things, is to listen to people we don't usually hear. And that was huge.
You know, that's really interesting. I'm just wrapping up Dori Clark's new book, Stand Out. And mm-hmm. she talks about that because I think it's another side effect is we get so overscheduled today that we're meeting after meeting after meeting from breakfast to after work in the evening. And it's all people that are in our deeply trodden tracks.
Yeah.
It's like there's nobody outside of things too. I mean, that's why even in reading, I try to alternate around what I'm reading because I think it's easy to get in a rut of, you know, only business books or even only marketing books as opposed to.
Yeah, and that's the same for me where I have many books at home and a very small fraction I've read. I like the idea of buying them. I just can't read them all the time. So, but the last two books I've read, I just finished yesterday on the plane. It was the Business of Comic-Con. Like taking two passions of mine. I'm an old school comic geek and then the business side of it. And the book before that was about the Beanie Baby boom. But it's about the businesses. So because I love business books, I really relate to them. Obviously I get something from them. But my goal was let's find some books that are really we've written four of them and everybody, you know, all of our circles have written these books all coming out. I'm like, I know what they're going to say. So I got to get out of that circle sometimes and say, what are these people saying who are well far out? And I enjoy these kind of case study ones. I love the Netflix one. It's a great book about Netflix and how that business. I'm halfway through the Lego book. So like getting yourself right out of that world of saying that it's really insulated in the world and also not reading from your choir. You know, like try to read some stuff that's not of your thought process. And it's great.
Well, that's interesting. I want to come and I'm scared to say this on the podcast this week, I want to come back to Henry Rollins. but you know, you talk about that, about getting outside of your circle. And as someone that speaks, and I also do, and I know that, you know, people are wanting, you know, they want to hear all of these examples from their circles. Mm-hmm. And I, one of the things that I, you know, try to get outside of my nice Midwesterner shell every now and then and push back on, you know, I understand that it's important to see things that are within your space, but I think sometimes today we're over case studied, especially as fast as things are moving. I don't think that you can only look inside, you know, real estate or automotive or garage door spring manufacturing.
I think you have to look, you that's, it's exactly the point, which is when I'm about to do a talk somewhere and they're like, can you use some industry examples? I'm like, do you really want me to? Do you want, if you are a retailer online, do you want me to use another Zappos example? Phenomenal company, great case studies. How many of you heard of them? Like at every single event, you're going to hear a talk about it. I said, if you're dentists, I want to talk to you about this car dealership. Like, it's just, you've got to break out of that real insulated world you've got, because you all, the biggest thing, and here's, I'm sure you get this too, every single phone call I do about an event before booking it or after booking it, and it's a pre-conference call, every event is the same sentence. It's, Scott, we saw you at ABC event. We loved it, but our audience is different. Every single call, bar none. And if everybody is different, everybody's the same. And that's the thing. People think the laws of human nature don't apply to their industry. And I do agree that there's little idiosyncrasies. There's little parts of it, of course, that are different. And sometimes there's legislation, sometimes there isn't. But at the end of the day, you know, if your industry has to do with humans, I got some pretty good examples that you might not think of. And then the job is then, to how do we apply it to our industry? Why do you want to be second in your industry? Why do you want to be the one that says, okay, they did it, now we can? And I know why, because it's safe. It's been, well, it's been proven. And the danger of this case study overload, especially, you know, inter-industry, is that we think, all right, we saw this, so it equals this. We think correlation equals causation, and we don't see behind the scenes what actually made that happen.
Well, and I think also, like you said, with relying on those correlations, I mean, so many of us, so many are missing any kind of strategy of thinking about why there's, but why they should be doing something. And instead, one of my theories on the case study overload is, instead of actually thinking through this from your business's perspective and making decisions that make the most sense, we say, oh yeah, that's what someone else in my industry is doing. That works. That's safe. It's quick, easy. I don't have to think.
Mm-hmm. And I can't be blamed.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes wrong.
And it worked over there.
Oh yeah. And we've got this point where we're like, as long as I can play it safe, as long as I don't get blamed, then that's good. And that doesn't create change. None of the great, if you talk about case studies, none of the great things were playing it safe. It's just, you got to step outside it. I think that's one of the reasons for going to a conference and whatnot, is to be able to see what happens out there. And the job is to say, okay, then how do we make that happen in our industry if we think it's relevant?
Well, and when it inevitably doesn't work as well as the original, which most of the times the echo doesn't, then you can also say, well, I didn't know it worked over there. So, yeah.
I mean, the most important case study is the one you're doing.
Well said. Now, as I got to say earlier, back to Henry Rollins, because I originally grabbed that because, you know, you being thought of, introduced the Henry Rollins of marketing, there's some similarities in your personal brands, I would say. So that's no BS there. And how, I mean, first, on his side of things, I would almost you jokingly rename this the Unbrand podcast. It almost seems like, I can't imagine Henry Rollins sitting down and thinking, okay, I need to strategically put this brand together. But man, there is a rock solid brand in place there. I mean,
but that's the thing with Henry, is that his brand is him. And some an audience member asked after he talked, he did a Q&A, and he's like, you know, so you were controversial here, and you know, do you put that in your thought process? And he looks at the guy, he's like, I've never been controversial in my life. I do things because they're right, and other people may think they're controversial. I don't do anything because I think it's controversial, and I would love as a great answer. And when people look at me, and I've done, you know, people ask to talk about brand and my personal brand because it's strong and the un type of thing and how I do it and everything. It's me. That I can't be off brand because the brand is based on me. And that's the thing. And there's things you can do, obviously, that we do with the show, with the on podcast, where we want it to have it look a certain way. But I never think, well, I should probably reply to this differently because that's my brand message. And for me, I'm one of those places where personal brand is my business brand. And it made it so easy because I can't trip up on that because I based it solely on how I think and how I do things.
So have you ever, because that was... not so surprisingly, a big part of my question in looking around at the landscape of the people in the space, and your brand, your personal brand is better, more comprehensive than most. I mean, and like you said, you can't be off brand, but as you've, you know, it's always, you know, hindsight, it's always easier to look back. Is there anything that in thinking of where you came from, your path that mm-hmm. got you here, who you are, the things that are uniquely you that you bring to the table that you said, oh, that's why I'm able to do X. That's why my brand is so clear.
Well, I think I've always had an idea where I've been always clear on my own drive and my own morals. And I just chose to take a stand about stuff. Like and it was, you know, unwavering, to use the un term again, that it's always been I polarize people, and that's not a marketing ploy. And I see a lot of people who are, especially creating personal brands, the people who will come out of a corporate thing and they're going to create their own thing. And they're like, okay, well, where do I play with this? And I looked at it and said, this is what I feel. And I also know that polarizing people also drive people two ways. It attracts them to you and it repels them to you. And I get that. But I had to be okay with that. I had to be okay that, what I was going to do was going to make people angry. I just had, you know, a Twitter tiffed with somebody yesterday because I called out an account that was just sharing Reddit photos and not giving credit. And I get it. The world of the internet is just the theme of the game is stolen content. But I called them out on it. I'm like, really? You just yanked it. I just saw this on Reddit. And he just did it every single day. And somebody else who was a part of the company that's a client of mine tried to call me out and say, I don't understand the outrage here. What's your problem? I'm like, you're just ripping stuff off. And they've almost got a million followers on this account. And he's like, but that's how it works. What's the problem? They just take it and they put it up here. I'm like, and he's getting upset at me for getting upset about content theft. And he's like, oh, now you're calling it theft. I don't think, you know, he goes, I think it's ignorant how the internet works. I'm like, I know how the internet works. It doesn't mean I have to be happy about it. And I don't back down from that stuff. There's certain things that I believe that integrity is not a renewable resource. And that's a big thing. A part of my brand is to be able to take a stand and say no. And I've gotten flack from it from day one. From before On Marketing, the first book came out, take a stand. Like things like no automating on Twitter, no scheduling on Twitter, as my personal view on it. And from right away, people came at me with that. They're like, it's not all black and white. And I'm like, I can't be gray. It's not like you can't automate on Twitter unless you can, unless sometimes maybe. Nobody cares about that. So I made sure that my viewpoints were black and white because that's the only way you get them across. Now, the brand I started with, I made a mistake. I originally created Unmarketing, I don't know, almost 15 years ago, and my original title was Unmarketing, and the subtitle was, and the tagline was, Marketing Your Business Without Spending a Dime. And the only thing that attracted was people who had no money.
Yeah.
And that was that. So that, I had to rethink that one pretty quickly, and I realized this, the brand was a strong one. And people are like, well, but you got... You know, you wear Doc Martens on stage and you got your jeans and you got this. And I'm like, look, I wear Doc Martens because I have a bad back. And they're really good for your back. They're really well-made boots. They're not, you know, they're not my pair of boots 90s and I'm going out and, some, you know, kick some arse out there. These are really orthopedic, which is not badass at all for me. And they look at it and say, well, you got this and you got the tattoos. I'm like, do you think I got tattoos because it was good for my brand? What is wrong with you people? And it's the thing with me is I know what I do can be polarizing. What I say, even how I look can be polarizing. I know I've lost gigs because of it, but my brand is me. And I don't waver on that.
Well, and I think that's something that's common for personal brands. And I mean, you can't, and corporate organizational brands, you can't just graft something on. That's, you had me thinking on the tattoo front about, you know, kind of the fictitious version of Henry Rollins or Scott Stratton that really they're just all fake tattoos and you're kind of very conservative bookish fellows, and that it's just this costume that you get into, and
yeah, the arm sleeves, you just pull them up, right, and they're good. But I've had gigs where they come and said, we want to book you for 3 gigs at 3 different regions of in a financial institution world. I'm like, but you have to wear a full suit. And I'm like, I don't. And I have no problem with suits. I have no problem with people wear suits. I just don't wear them. I don't feel comfortable in them. I can't. My arms flail on stage, and that's restricting. I have jazz hands. These puppies got to fly. And I talk about being authentic as one of my things. And to change that for me is it's hard.
See, why I would love to segue to something like that. I'm a sweater, so I don't need to be the broadcast news guy, like mopping the brow constantly.
I am too. That's the thing. I am. People are like, Scott, you wear a lot of black shirts, and I used to wear a lot of white shirts, and they're like, that's your brand. I'm like, I sweat like a pig. And if you want me to wear a light blue shirt, you ain't going to like it about 5 minutes into my talk, because you're going to see a whole new lake formation. So it was that's seriously, all my look is out of necessity, not out of brand.
Well, but you look at that from a brand perspective, though. I think some people would hear like the suit thing and they think, ugh, diva speaker.
Oh, yeah.
But I think also, if you think about that, go, you know, Google you, or, you know, kick some tires on you speaking, and you're going to find a consistent product, a consistent brand. And I think that that's not nothing, too. Whereas if you found like the button down suited up Scott sometimes out there,
yeah,
then I think it's a short-term win, like you said, the 3 gigs. But I know I would be a believer in what that would do long-term. Would stymie.
I have a lot of loyal. I'm very lucky to have a loyal following. And if they saw me in a suit, it would. I would. I'm not exaggerating. They would go. They would leave. They're like, that's just not the message you have been sending for a decade to us, and that's just because you wanted a couple bucks. Mind you want to pay me $1 million, I'll wear whatever you want. You know, that's
we all have our line.
But really, it's the point of, and people say, well, oh, you got your diva because you're not wearing a suit. I'm like, did you hear the sentence you just said? Like, I don't want to be that buttoned up kind of look, and you know, this expensive suit, and I'm the diva. Like, yeah. It's I had one event where in Vegas, and it was a couple thousand people in insurance, and I was about to keynote it, and I was wearing at the time just a black t-shirt, my jeans, and my boots, and the meeting planner, who I hadn't met, came up to me, looked me up and down, and said, can you go change? I'm about to walk on stage, and this is at the Venetian, where it's 17 miles back to your room, first off. And you have to take three buses to get there. And I look at her, and I look at the guy who's on stage before me, and he's bombing. He's just dying. He's not good at all, but he's wearing a suit.
You're saying I should look more like that guy?
And I looked at her, and I said, trust me, nobody's going to walk out of my talk and say, that was amazing, but he should have worn a tie. And then she walked away and said, whatever. And I walk on stage, and the guy before me in the suit hands me his microphone. He thinks I'm the AV guy. He thinks I'm the sound guy. And I hand it back to him, and I say, watch this. And I get up, and I can hear the whole room just do the, what's this guy going to say and do? And I got up there, and I say, hey, everybody, I don't have insurance, and I don't sell insurance, and that's your fault. Here's why. And I just kicked their arse for an hour, and I got a standing ovation, the only one of their 5-day conference. And I got off stage, and that same meeting planner was standing there with her head down. And I'm like, how was that? She goes, that was amazing. And I'm like, so no need for the tie. I was okay. And she just kept hanging her head. And I just walked out of the room.
You know, you mentioned on the personal brand front, people coming out of the corporate world. And I think we all know a lot of people like that and that are looking to emerge and create a brand. Is there some nugget of advice that you would give to someone as someone that's created such a strong identity?
I think that one of the biggest things is that branding, I think sometimes people mistake the word branding. I don't think branding is always about what you is like what you wear, or the the way you look. Branding to me is thought branding. That the most powerful thing you can do, especially when you've been in a corporate career for a long time, is come out there and create a brand based on thought. That what you say, you know, in your blog posting and social media, on stage in front of people, is that you've got to pick a point that you make a stand on. That I believe this. And the problem is we're scared, going back to the polarization side of it, we're scared to polarize. We're scared to take a stronger stance because we fear we're going to offend. And when we try to offend nobody, we offend everybody because nobody wants to read it. It's neutral. Nobody wants to sit on the fence, not to mention it's an uncomfortable thing to do, that nobody resonates with that. Nobody runs and goes to Facebook and shares a blog post and says, you guys got to check out this mediocre post. It really says nothing, and he was really playing it safe. Now, mind you, I'm not saying be controversial for controversial sake. I'm not saying create a raise a stink because it's a good thing to do. What I'm saying is we all have thoughts, we all have strong beliefs and thoughts, and that brand can be done, especially online, in a way that's branding with thought, not necessarily with a look.
Well, and in thinking of the kind of black and white and kind of your integrity stance on things, you talked about the stolen content point. And I think you had a podcast episode recently where you and Allison talked about that. Also, and it's interesting because I think, again, on kind of the brand front, you take this stolen content and it's an interesting example. It's kind of the opposite of what you were just mentioning of have unique thoughts, unique content, and then your brand is that. Because in those cases, it kind of seems like, I think the example that you were citing was like the fat Jewish social media account. And because they're taking other content and then kind of building their own brand around that. So that's, it's theft, but then it's also like building this kind of fake storefront in front of it.
And that is one of my biggest issues. It was the Fat Jewish Instagram account and the Tyrese Gibson Facebook account. And my problems with these are that, while we're building our own brand, it's nothing to do with your brand. It's not yours. Yeah. It's not your content. People say, well, what's the problem? That's what happens. Reddit is just a deposit or a depot for stolen content anyway. So we're just taking it from there. I'm like, because somebody steals a TV and you steal it from them, it doesn't make it right. You just can't do that. And the problem is they're playing off of Facebook's EdgeRank algorithm with Tyrese's account, which is Facebook hugely gives favor to native video. So video that's uploaded natively to the Facebook platform. So what people like Tyrese Gibson are doing, and many, many others, is also really huge in like radio station Facebook accounts, which is funny, by the way, that whole term radio station Facebook account, that they will take and rip the source video out of the YouTube account of somebody who's proven to go popular and upload it natively to their own Facebook account. And not only do that, they won't even give a sniff of credit back to the original account they ripped it from. And then they'll put their own promotion. So what Tyrese Gibson was doing was sharing this picture, one of the most viewed videos of all time in 2014 on all time, because that's when they started doing video, 2014. Was a video that was not his, that was ripped because it was already proven to go viral on YouTube. And on it, he pushed out his iTunes new album. His new single was dropping.
Ugh.
So you see what I mean? Look, I have friends and you have friends that share content on Facebook that's not theirs. They'll take a picture off of Reddit. It's proven to go viral. It's just lazy content, which is – it's not only unethical to me, it's lazy by saying, oh, it's proven to work, let's just take this. And they'll share them. But there's no harm, no foul, other than their integrity. There's no real profiting from it. They simply share it on their personal account just to their friends. And the only profit they get is their friends think they're funnier than they actually are. That's really the biggest problem with that. The issue with the accounts like Tyrese Gibson, who then promotes his album on that, or the Fat Jewish Instagram account who is now coming out with his own brand of wine because of his popularity, you are directly commercial, monetarily benefiting from stealing content. And I got popular on one day on the Fat Jewish Instagram account with my banned Candy Crush invites protest sign I'm holding up. And mind you, I appreciate the Fat Jewish account because it made my children think I was cool because I was on his account. So that was nice. But it was a ripped picture of it. No credit to my account, no credit. And they're like, well, that's how the internet works. Well, that's not how my internet worked. It never worked like that. The internet was built on trust. It's built on content and trust and community. And this whole land rush for vanity metrics, this whole land rush for likes and follows and regrams and retweets and shares that is not vanity anymore because now we try to profit off of it, it's not right.
Well, and I think about kind of the other side of that, too, that is something that's a really neat part of your brand as well. I mean, like I've said, anybody that's seen you speak, listens to the Unpodcast, knows that, you know, a big part of your message, your books on stage is, you know, all of these unbelievable fails that brands are making today.
Right.
And you've mentioned before, and I think one of the like I said, the neatest things about that is that now, because of the thought branding that you've done around that, you have it's strong enough that other people are sending you stuff you've talked about before. How does that? I mean, because that's that's the gold standard. That's what everybody wants. It's like I have the ideas unique enough that people understand my worldview and are sending me stuff that they know is part of that. What? You know, is there a way to replicate such a thing?
Every damn day we get stuff. It's amazing. And I would love to tell the folks listening right now that here is your 5-step process to get people to send you content every day. I made a strong brand that was clear. We want your train wrecks. We built a strong brand that says we're putting brands on watch. And the difference was that I remember going to a bookstore 12, 13 years ago when I was switching over the Unmarketing brand from the cheapest thing in the world to the, you know, the, just doing it the right way. And I looked at the bookshelf in the bookstore of all the business books, and they were all just, here's what to do. Here's the success. Here's how to do it. Here's how to do it. And nobody was kind of pointing out what went wrong or the dangers or the problems with doing something the wrong way. And that's where it fit my personality really well, my thought process. And we just started putting it out there. And people say, well, you just created a Facebook page and a blog and off they went. And I'm like, I put a lot of work into this, where it was the effort that it was the 112,000 tweets, you know, all manual that I've written. It's all the talks and the show now. And everything we did focused on that it makes that I was lucky to grab the UN side of things, almost first out of the gate. So it allowed me to have a real hook. And I'm all about hooks. I can't train people like to have a marketing brain. It's like to train people to have an entrepreneur brain. It doesn't turn off. It's just a natural thing for some people. And that everything in my brain was about hooks. That I like, no matter what we did, we had to have an easy, grabbable hook to it. And I actually picked the name Unmarketing originally because I thought it would look good on a book cover eventually because it would stand out. And it just kind of caught on with that. But every day, and here's the danger with me is that people know that we have this platform, this voice, and as a great, great man once said, with great power comes great responsibility. And you have to watch out for that. Somebody yesterday tweeted me and said TripAdvisor took off a friend's review. They were like, you know, they censored it, and something happened really terrible. And do something about it, Scott. Like they put out like the unsignal in the sky, right? And this the un, which gets confused with the UN, so they think it's United Nations are coming, but. And so, you know, I'd fly in with my cape and I have to do now because of this platform, I have to say, oh, cool. Can you send it to me so I can look at it first instead of just flying off the handle every time something happens?
Yeah.
And then she emailed me and said, you know what? I actually told her to send me the actual review and it actually should have been pulled because of the language. So call off the horses, you know, call off the hounds. And you realize there is a responsibility for that. So if people do have, let's say they go down the route of taking a stand and making sure that, you know, standing up for what's right or whatever that's going to be, is that we have to make sure no matter what we do now, especially with our own personal brands, because you don't get two shots at it, is that instead of trying to be first with something, we have to make sure we're right first. You know, in this world of who's going to blog it first, who's going to tweet it first, we got to take a little bit of journalistic integrity and confirm things. Where we had something happen about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, where somebody sent me a picture for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And it was a picture of in a store window that said MLK Day. Everything in the store black is 25% off. So all black things in the store are reduced. And I'm like, let's do this. And I'm ready you called for the thunder and now you got it. Like, I'm ready to roll. And I realize, just find out. And so I went down and sourced who took the first photo. The original went back through all the retweets, found the guy, confirmed he actually walked by the store and took it. Then I phoned the store in Duluth, Minnesota, and said, hey, I'm just doing a post on MLK Day. I'm just confirming you have a sale on. They're like, yeah, everything black, 25% off. I'm like, thank you. Hung up the phone, and then I wrote the blog post. And the blog post got 100,000 views that day. But I was confident that what I had written was right. And the difference is, if I didn't do that, and let's say somebody just put a sign up out of nowhere, which happens, by the way, a lot. People put a sign up on a restaurant and take a picture because they want to get them in trouble. If it went wrong and it wasn't right, I got to live with that. And I don't want to sound arrogant on this, but I and you and a lot of people have the power to make people lose their business. They can shut it down. People have shut down their businesses. And that power, not to mention a lawsuit potential, is we have a responsibility with content to confirm, to vet things, to look at them. But we want to be first, and that's not right.
So I sense a connection point between this and my next question, which was why, because your inbox is so full from all of this, why are businesses missing so much nowadays? Is there any single point that it just seems, is it not thinking through? Is it not understanding new channels? Where do you think the disconnect is?
Well, I think we're missing so much a lot of times because there is so much. You know, before, back in the old days, you know, back in the 90s, where your job in marketing was to get a marketing message out. Your job in PR was to get press. Your job in customer service was to deal with one-to-one customer issues. They phoned, they were in the store, they were there, whatever it was. Even with email, it was still one-to-one. And then the world blew up in a sense that customer service was one to everyone. It was public, and it was publicly shamed. There was all these things going out there. Marketing turns into what? What is marketing now? I don't know. Is social part of that? Is PR part of that now? Where does advertising fall under that? What is advertising? Is it a promoted tweet advertising? Is a Facebook update, but you promote it to get it farther out? Is that now under your advertising department versus your marketing or your communications department? So we miss so much, I think, because there is so much that there's just, it's so overwhelming. The rate and the pace of change, which I love, but also fear if I actually worked and had a job at a company, is that it goes so fast that it makes your head spin. We set budgets based on a year and we have little tweaks for each quarter, but the rate of change is monthly. Like last year, people were still discussing their Google Plus strategies, yeah. You know, and 6 months ago, they're asking, what is our Elo strategy? Like, it's insane of what's going on here to keep up with these type of things. And I don't blame people who are getting messed up with it. It's so much. And then we have people holding you accountable like us. You know, your goal is to stay out of our show. Like, that's the whole point of it, or out of the presentation. So I get it. I think there's a huge amount of platform overwhelm, of department kind of bleed that goes between departments now. And corporations and people who work inside them, it's a lot about a power game and, you know, who controls what and who controls what budget. But now we have this public side of things. And I think it's a lot to handle. I am ecstatic about two things. One, that this world didn't exist when I was a teenager. Because to have a digital permanent record of what I was like, it would not be a good thing. And secondly, I love the fact that I don't have to manage a brand or people now. I used to be in HR, if you can believe that. I went to school for human resources. I was in it. I taught it. As I say to people, I had to get out of it because I realized I hate people. But but to be just in HR, just an HR in a company dealing with things like Twitter and Facebook posts and Instagram with employees. I thought blogging was scary back in my day. But this whole world now, just managing people not only inside but outside in the 24/7 digital world, I understand why it's overwhelming.
Well, you talk about education, and as an educator myself, I'm always intrigued when people kind of share that background as well. You talk about what businesses are missing in terms of how different things are. I'm constantly thinking about the, for lack of a better word, the product that we're putting out in terms of education. Mm-hmm. What do we think we might be missing there, or that we could at least be doing better in preparing people for the new world of work?
If you get me on an educational rant, we're not going to stop. I don't think we're ever going to stop. Where, you know, the world of post-secondary education, which I love. You know, being I was a faculty member at Sheridan for 7 years. I don't know if you agree with this, Nick, but that there was nothing more fulfilling to me than teaching. I love it.
It's my favorite thing that I do. I do the other things I joke to subsidize my teaching habits.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I loved and in front of a classroom and having, for me, it was 30, 35 students and a lot of first year college students. And they just had this open brain. And we just talked about the real world out there in business and how it applied. I loved it. And I had to stop doing it just because the book came out and these conferences. And like you said, you had to subsidize teaching with something else. And I haven't done it in, I think, five, six years now. And I miss it because we got a shot. Now, taking that into account then for my answer is that we have a lot of people, obviously present company excluded, but that are teaching in these places and these institutions that have been removed so much from the quote real world that what they're teaching now is not exactly always relevant. I don't think the foundation or the principles of any field changes. The foundations of accounting, of marketing, of HR, of finance, of all these worlds don't change. Okay, it's still fundamentally the same. We still act the same as humans in market and what makes us want to go in an advertising, what gets triggers, all the same. But how they're applied in today's world is different. And especially on a college level thing is the application of knowledge that's important. And to be able to say, look, any kind of marketing program that's in a school right now, university or college, anywhere in this world that is not including the online world and social and the digital world and is not providing a core part of their curriculum on that, they have to reevaluate why they're in that business. Because it's so, not only is it so applicable, here's the thing, not only is it so applicable, but it is natural to the students you're currently teaching. They have this opportunity that almost never existed before. When I graduated college in the mid, late 90s, the internet was exploding. And I walked out of college with the same amount of internet knowledge, if not exponentially more, because of just being on the internet entirely in college. Was I walked into the workforce with more knowledge about a fundamental part of business than people that were in business for 30 years. That was huge for me. And now you got students coming out who've grown up attached to an Ethernet cable, logged into Wi-Fi from almost since birth, which is that is their asset. That is their leg up. And I Skype into classes. I'm doing one tomorrow for a college in San Diego. I love Skyping into these classes and telling them, listen, you got the goods. Like you're good. Don't feel like you're smaller than people. Or, I mean, obviously, be respectful and have tact, but you've got more knowledge than most people out there right now because it's natural to you. And there's still a huge generation, if not multi-generations, that are in the workforce now that are still in denial about what's going on. And to have people teach stuff that won't include that. We heard one professor in Ottawa here that said, I don't teach social media because that's not real connections. I'm like, oh, God. Oh, I don't feel bad for you. I feel bad for the students. Yeah. I feel bad for the students that the people, whoever's standing in front of that room better have more knowledge than the people sitting in the chairs. Yeah. And I don't think that's the case anymore because post-secondary education moves so slowly. And I understand why. I totally understand why from being in that system that the accreditation side of things and degree granting and diploma granting and a professional designation granting and all these things, not to mention the textbook industry, which is a whole racket on its own, is that saying that to move this ship, it's like moving 27 cruise ships plus two oil tankers and saying, just spin around. right? So you and I, who are in our kayaks, are like, whew, we just whip it around. We're good to go. These ships can't. There's not a body of water big enough to have them turn. And that's a problem, that the students are sitting back saying, I know more than you.
Yeah. Oof. Well, my final question is to most an easy one, but I wonder with all of the train wrecks, can you think of a brand that has made you smile recently?
Yeah, that's the question, right? We always try in each episode of the Podcast, we try to bring out one good thing. It's almost like the one good thing segment of the show.
The
right?
One good thing.
Like the one good thing that happened in the world this week, because we do focus on the bad, but it allows us to make the good, you know, really special when we talk about it. I just had an experience. We just bought a house, and that's a big, you know, that's a big deal. That's one of the biggest things you'll do in your life. And I would say the brand, it was Sotheby's Real Estate, really impressed me. But here's the thing. It's not Sotheby's. It's our realtor. Like, he's the brand to us. And the brand impressions that make you feel great, make you feel special, is never about the brand. It's about the employee. It's about the individual. And Petrus, who is our realtor, Petrus Engelbrecht Homes, he blew our minds. And I have yelled at realtors for years. Like, I'm surprised I'm not on a most wanted list for these guys because I get so mad at them. Like, a lot of my best viewed videos are me yelling at realtors, and because they do so wrong. And here's how he got us as a client. So we were last year, I did a talk at my local real estate board for a bunch of people in the area, and he saw it and he said, you know, I love what he says. And then he started listening to our shows. And we have not only the On Podcast, we have our sister show that we do occasionally called The Vegas 30, which is for people going to Vegas who are over 30. And the tagline is too old to stand in line, but too young to retire to bingo.
Nice.
So, you know, because Vegas is different when you're 38 than when you're 21, right? You know, I've been to Vegas 60 times in the past 10 years, and I party to the wee hours of 9 p.m. Like, you know, I'm in bed before people are getting out of bed for that place. So we found a need and we filled it with the show, and he listened to the show. And on the show, one of the show episodes was about discovering stuff off the strip. And we discovered this place called Ronald's Donuts, which is a great place in Chinatown. We found it because of Yelp. They had like 140 reviews on Yelp, which is amazing for a donut place. And we bought, and it was amazing. It was amazing, amazing. And it was perfect. So we talked about it on the show. And wouldn't you know, 6-7 months ago, on our doorstep is a pink box, and inside of it was a dozen Ronald's donuts from Vegas and a note from Petrus saying, we heard you like donuts. We'd really like the show. Thanks so much. And with his card and his note, he flew us donuts from Vegas. And it wasn't like, let me know when you're ready to buy a house. So what do we do with the donuts? Well, I ate them, first off. And then we bring him to, but coincidentally, and he didn't know, that day was a studio day for us. So he filmed 4 episodes of the Podcast at one time at a shot. And so I bring the donuts in, and now they're on the show. And Allison's like, you realize you're eating donuts that were left on our doorstep. I'm like, yeah, of course. The best type of donuts are free stranger donuts. Of course.
Free stranger
donuts. Yeah. And of course, now who do we talk about on the show? We talk about Petrus. We talk about that. And here's the thing. If all you did was brought donuts and then waited for us to buy a house, the story wouldn't have ended probably with them using them. But every month he would hand deliver in our mailbox, not knock on the door, not smile and say, remember those donuts? Let's buy a house. He dropped a nice glossy magazine off about, you know, ideas for the home and things. And then attached to it was a sheet of the local area of sale, what was sold, what's on the market, and never pressured us. And then 2 months ago, Alice and I were talking, who's not only a co-host of the On Podcast and the co-author, but also my co-host in life. We're sitting there talking. We're like, let's look in the next year for a home. So obviously, when you say that, that means in the next 2 days, we're going to find a home. And we found one. And we're like, we don't have an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the agent who's on the front of mind for us? It's Petrus. So we called him and boom, he was there. And the first house we offered on, we didn't get it. But it would have been the easiest real estate commission in history, by the way. It was the cost of donuts. But the second house we saw, we bought.
Yeah.
And that was all. But he was also great in that whole process. So the combination of being awesome to get our attention and then being awesome at the business itself created this great. And here's the thing about the brand. You're talking about brands that impressed me. I thought Sotheby's was an auction house.
Yeah.
I just thought they auctioned off Fabergé eggs. and paintings and things. Like, that was not a real estate brand that was in my wheelhouse. And I know they do kind of, there's high-end real estate. We're not buying like a $14 million mansion. Now, the houses in the area I live in are expensive, but they're not, you know, multi-million dollar homes. And he's like, no, I'm just, it's me. So he represented the brand, and that was the biggest thing. Brands that impress you are always have to do with the individual that's part of that brand. And that's my story of Sotheby's.
Awesome. Well, I had the same stereotype. I thought, just eggs.
And, yeah. Yeah. $12 million for this egg sold. Like that's what I thought.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Great story. As we wrap up, where should folks go to learn more about you?
Everything is on. So if you listen to a podcast through the Unpodcast and any platform you use, or unpodcast.com, we'll bring into the episodes, because we also do full video of every show. So it's like we actually hesitated at calling it a podcast sometimes, because we actually do a full studio 3-camera HD shoot as well with it. So if you like to watch, it's there. If you like to listen, go. And Unmarketing on every platform you can imagine. So it's the site, that's the Facebook page, that's the Twitter, that's the Instagram, even places I don't even know I'm on. It's there.
It's all there. Unmarketing everywhere for your source of all things Un. Scott, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. Always a pleasure.
And a reminder, if you heard something you liked on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, feel free to tweet us using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find everything that we talked about, links to donuts, and everything in between at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show there via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over, give us a quick rating review, help others find the show. And last, but again, not least, this podcast is brought to you by the industry-leading Social Brand Forum. You can learn more and register now for this premier digital marketing experience at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.